City Radio in your city. Cambridge 105.
Right, thanks Julian, and welcome to Gadget Guide number 22, I think. We're busy setting up at the gig tonight, so this comes to you from a little bit in the past. Anyway, welcome along. I'm Rob.
And Lawrence.
And while we've got a free couple of moments, let's have a quick chat about some of the electronic cash and other technologies that you might have heard about. So if you've heard of things like NFC, then we'll see what that's about. But first, as usual, let's have a quick roundup of the technology news for this week.
So obviously a lot of gadget-related April Fool's jokes cropped out. The biggest one, Google always got several on the go, but they released something that they called Google Nose, which was basically smell-o-vision, so where you could have remote smells and send smells and things like that. So obviously quite a good joke on that one. But as I said, they've always had good April Fool's jokes. Other things in the news from Google, Nexus 7 second generation is rumoured to be coming out, and that'll have a Qualcomm Snapdragon processor, and looking to undercut Amazon's Kindle Fire HD.
So that, of course, itself has just had a relatively recent facelift, hasn't it, in the last few months. So obviously the sort of non-iPad tablet market is really starting to pick up now, it seems.
It certainly is, and Google released a breakdown of the operating system Split and Jelly Bean, which is the latest version, is significantly increasing in the percentage of market share of Android operating systems, nearly about 25% at the moment.
And that's kind of interesting for me, because before that we had Android tablets, we had, I guess, the fairly short-lived Honeycomb ones, and before that, the ones based on Android 2.2. But really, before Jelly Bean, and I guess to some degree Ice Cream Sandwich, it didn't feel like it was really ready for prime time. You know, the iPad always seemed like a much slicker tablet. It felt like it was designed for the tablet. Whereas now, I guess the Android OS is really coming of age on the larger form factor.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people are changing their expectations on what they want from a tablet these days. So, you know, they're not necessarily tied to an iPad. And the interesting thing is I've had some users say to me, well, they've gone for an Android tablet because their iPhone does everything that they need to do in the Apple world, and they're happy to actually experience something different in the Android world, and also at a significant reduction in price.
Okay. Let's move on to another bit of Google technology, and this is really Google Glass. So if you haven't heard of this, this is the futuristic pair of goggles complete with a heads-up display and a camera and everything like that. And some of the demo videos have been really rather slick. But it's been causing a bit of a stir, hasn't it, in terms of privacy issues?
Yeah, I mean, there's already some clubs and bars and venues and so on in the States that have gone and banned the product before it's even ever actually shipped to anyone. So they're worried about the fact that someone will be able to actually walk around with Google Glass on, recording what's going on and invade people's privacy.
But what about things that, and you can do that already with things like the GoPro, the sort of wearable head cameras, I guess. How's Glass different?
Well, I suppose because it's a smaller form factor. I mean, they do just look like a pair of designer spectacles. So they are very small and tidy. But, I mean, it's going to be obvious that you've got this thing on because you've got a small heads-up display which is visible to anyone looking at you. Well, I mean, they're going to see that there's something lit up on your face. But it's a bit of scaremongering still. At the start of this new technology.
Yeah, and I remember when phone cameras and even, I guess, the first digital cameras came out, there was a whole load of stuff about people forcing them to have shutter noises, your artificial shutter sounds, so that people knew when they were taking photos. And I guess maybe it just needs to be something similar on Glass, you know, maybe the sort of the red flashing LED or similar at the front to sort it out.
Well, I suppose, yes, that's one option. Obviously, that's a power drain concern, and if you are using something battery-powered, every single spare bit of battery power that you can get obviously counts. But yes, I mean, you know, are you going to be feeling comfortable going into the loo when someone walks in behind you wearing Google Glass? Yeah, I suppose that's the sort of things where you might feel a bit concerned.
True. On to Apple now, and they've got their own rumours, which of course is the next iPhone, which is probably the 5S, I think, is the generally accepted name so far.
Yeah, following Apple's regular convention of going major number then adding an S. special edition halfway between that and the next major release. So they're talking, well, the rumours are June for an iPhone 5S. No ideas on what the changes are going to be, but they're going to have to do a fair amount of work to catch up. If they stick with the 5 series, it won't have a bigger screen because they've never done that inside an S series. And they're now falling behind on screen size again. Camera resolution is something that they might do some work on, but it's one of those that we'll have to watch this space.
Very good. Right, let's talk about some of the electronic cache. And this is really an area that's seeing an awful lot of innovation, new technology, new companies around, isn't it, at the moment?
So, yeah, I mean, you know, to quote one of the banks that had a tagline in their advertising, what's in your wallet, Rob?
It's a fair point, and mostly credit cards, debit cards, and you know, various bits and pieces of ID, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just think, you know, when did you last write out a check?
Unfortunately, quite recently. I think it was the DVLA. But yes, when you have to do that, it's certainly for me at least, it's a big struggle to find the checkbook.
But I mean, if you say you've got credit and debit cards in your pocket, I mean, all of those have got a chip on them now. They're all chip and pin, so they're now smart cards.
Yeah, that's actually, if you're wondering what's on there, that's actually a miniature computer on your credit card. And that actually, when you put it into one of the pin pads, will actually do some computation. And that's what makes it more secure than the old magnetic stripe, which really just stored the credit card number along the front. The chip and pin cards actually do some very clever maths on the card itself to make them much, much harder to steal and to copy.
Yeah, now, I mean, some of the analysts are saying that chip and pin's already had its day. I mean, we've only had it for a few years where we've been doing pin numbers instead of signing things. But they're now saying, you know, do we need something more than that? Because there's still hundreds of millions of pounds worth of fraud every year on chip and pin.
That's true, although I'm not sure how much of it. So I think that with chip and pin, it sort of pushed it to the next easiest target, which is the cardholder not present. Which is effectively the you've rung someone up and read out your credit card number over the phone and the three digits on the back. And of course, that isn't helped by the chip and pins. So I guess it's whether we can secure that, because that's sort of the easiest route into fraud at the moment. So I'm not sure what the answer is there.
Well, actually, the problem that they've discovered is there's lots of fraud with skimmers attached to ATMs and to card readers in things like fuel stations and so on, where you're entering your PIN, that's getting captured, your card's being read, and people are then cloning the cards. And that's still creating a lot of fraud. So they're saying, you know, maybe the next big thing, and, you know, the information will be stored on the card, but, you know, a fingerprint scan or a retina scan. So, you know, the days of sci-fi type, you know, put your eyeball here to identify and pay for your drinks at the bar, they're not that far away.
True. And of course, a lot of people, I'm sure, are finding with internet banking, the banks are now more and more moving away from passwords, which are effectively the same as a PIN, and giving you, I know if you're with HSBC, for example, they give you a little dongle type thing that you have to type in a PIN number, and then it gives you a number which you type into the bank.
And I had to deal with one of my banks today, and logging on, it says, right, okay, enter your security details, and, well, your username, then your security details, and it says, your mobile phone number has got these last four digits, and you say yes, and it says, we've sent you the PIN number that you're going to use for this transaction. And a text message arrives with that password once, or one use only.
Now, that's interesting, because I likewise, indeed today, not in banking, but in some systems I use at work, came across a service called Alter Ego, which does something very similar. But what that does is it sends you an email saying, we notice you've just tried to log into this site. Text back yes or no as to whether you actually want that login to go through. And that's quite clever, because that means you're not typing any long codes or whatever. All you do is reply with a yes on your phone, and then it lets your web browser carry on. So some quite clever and interesting new technologies, I think, around that security.
Yeah, all of that's pretty neat. I mean, you know, cards work well in the retail environment, but as you said, you know, there's the online security issues do crop up. And MasterCard and Visa are both coming up with ways to make it safer. I mean, anyone who shopped online with either of those two will have seen things like Secure Code by MasterCard or Verified by Visa, which make it easier to add that extra bit of encryption. So there's more than just a password, more than just the details on your card. So if your card's stolen, they're not necessarily going to know some secret question like your mother's maiden name or your, you know, what your first pet's name was and things like that.
Yeah, indeed. But moving maybe more into the online world, away from the sort of traditional banks and credit cards, and PayPal is the obvious system here. And those guys, are, of course, owned by eBay. And that really is where it got popular. But now you can pretty much pay with everything, for everything with PayPal. And that means that rather than giving your credit card number to everyone you buy something off, you're only giving it to PayPal. And that's really important because it means that even if the person you're purchasing something from isn't necessarily trustworthy themselves, all you have to do is to trust PayPal only to give the £10 or whatever it was.
Absolutely. And the banks all trust PayPal. PayPal have got a European banking license, UK banking license, so they are very safe to use. Also, interestingly, you don't need to actually open a PayPal account to use PayPal and pay someone. If someone sent you a request for money with PayPal to pay an invoice or something, you can pay using your card, but never actually sign up for an account.
Very, very handy. Now, there's plenty of scare stories floating around about PayPal. And is it something that is problematic for most people, or is it actually fine most of the time?
So yes, quite a lot of phishing emails go around. So a phishing email is something that's sent out looking like it's legitimately from your bank or from someone like PayPal, telling you things like, your account is limited. Please log on and correct this detail, otherwise you can't make your payment. Or they might send you something saying, your bank transaction failed. And it looks legitimate, and they'll include branding from your bank, they'll include branding from PayPal or whatever. But if you look at the link that it's going to, it's not going to be that institution who sent you the email. So the secret with phishing emails, if you got something from PayPal, ignore the email, go directly to your web browser, type in paypal.com, and go directly to the site and look at it that way. Same for your bank. If you get something from your bank in an email, don't look at the email, don't click on anything in the email, go directly to the site that's concerned and access it that way. That way is going to be safer in case there's something dodgy in the email.
And tonight we're talking about digital money and electronic cash and that sort of thing. We've just been covering some of the developments in the sort of credit card industry and talking about PayPal. But there's a technology that's been bandied around a bit recently, and that's NFC, or near-field communications. Do you want to just explain a little bit about what that is?
So you might have seen on some of your cards, and the likes of Barclays have certainly been one of the first ones out with it, you see a little symbol which looks like a Wi-Fi symbol on your card. As well as the smart card chip in there, there's actually an extra chip in there and a little coil of wire to give it an aerial, and that's an NFC chip. So the card is active in terms of being able to talk to something wirelessly. So you'd bring it close to a reader, which would charge up the card, send some energy through it, read the chip, and basically access information on that about your bank, about your transaction, about your account status, all without any physical contact. Now, this sort of technology has been around a while. I mean, one of the places that's in a lot of people's pockets is in London.
And that's, of course, the Oyster card.
But a lot of you will have had that in your pocket anyway. Your office access card, your gym card to access the gym. Anything that's a magnetic lock that isn't a swipe card is using an NFC type technology. So there's a coil, there's a chip, and basically holding it up to the scanner activates the card, sends some information, and lets you in or lets you access something.
Now, surely if you've got something that doesn't need to be inserted into a chip and pin reader or something like that, it's obviously a lot more convenient. Doesn't it have the problem that if I'm standing in a busy street or something, can't someone just walk up to me and effectively empty my wallet without me even noticing?
Right. Now, the banks have thought about that, obviously, and there's a few things that make it a little bit more difficult for that. In fact, a lot difficult. First of all, the card readers that access these have all been tightly controlled as far as access to them. So you could buy an NFC reader, but it's not going to be able to access the encrypted portions of your card that store the financial information. Those all require a key from the bank. So when your card is presented to a reader, the reader goes, it's Barclays, goes off and requests the security details from Barclays, and then comes back and presents that to your card to access the information. So man on the street who buys an NFC reader is not going to be able to do that. The other thing they've done is they've put a limit on the amount of money that can happen in a wireless transaction, an NFC transaction. And it's limited to less than £10 normally. And in addition to that, randomly it will ask you to enter your PIN number.
So in other words, it's enough to buy a cup of coffee maybe, but not a whole new laptop or to empty your bank account.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to buy you the sort of things you buy in a newsagent.
Right, so newspapers, coffee, breakfast, that sort of thing. Which is really, I guess if you're buying something big, it's not too much of a problem to go and do a major, you know, chip and pin and authenticate yourself. But if you just want to grab a newspaper, then you just want it to be a very, very quick and easy experience.
Yeah, or, you know, add, well, like if you're using your Oyster card in London, swipe through the gates and, you know, you're in and gone. And, I mean, they're talking about these transactions taking hundreds of milliseconds. So very quick, very easy, and, you know, making it easier for you to get out of the shop with the goods you've purchased.
Okay, so I've got that now on my credit card. I've got the symbol. I can go into the coffee shop and buy something. But actually, as well as my credit card having it, it's a technology that my phone has as well, isn't it? Some of the newer phones actually have NFC built into them as well. And we're now starting to see that being used by some of the payment providers as well. So I know that Google have got something, Google Wallet, that means now I don't even have to carry a wallet around. I can just use my phone to pay for things.
Absolutely. And I mean, Google were one of the main drivers behind NFC for payments. And a lot of the phone manufacturers that they've worked with have included the technology. Interestingly, it's something that Apple haven't yet put into an iPhone. So they are sitting on the edge on that one still. But today in Cambridge, you can use Google Wallet on your phone. So basically you activate your credit card or your debit card into your Google Wallet. That includes the information in your NFC phone, and you can use it today in the likes of Subway, Boots, Marks and Spencer's, Pret a Manger, Cafe Nero, Clinton Cards, The Regal, Nando's, All Bar One. All of these shops in Cambridge that support touch payments will work with Google Wallet.
And so maybe that's something that is going to be added to the iPhone 5S. Possibly that could be one of the reasons to upgrade.
I mean, we'd like to certainly see Apple come to the party on NFC because they are a popular brand, and I mean it's a technology that the banks seem to like. So, you know, why not?
Sounds good, but all of this is fine when I'm in McDonald's or in Costa or something. What about if I want to just hand over some cash to a friend? Yeah, they've bought me a drink or a meal, and I want to pay them back. Obviously, they don't have the full card reader and everything else from the bank. How do you deal with that?
I'll take a £20 note, thanks, Rob.
Ah, but we're moving away from cash. I don't want all that heavy change lying around in the bottom of my pocket.
Well, I suppose you could bax me, but, you know, that's quite a painful thing to do out and about, you know, internet banking and all of that. So some of the banks have thought about this as well. Barclays seem to be a leader in this sort of innovation, you know, first with the NFC credit cards, and they've come up with a thing called Ping It. Now, Ping It is not just for Barclays customers. You can download the app. It's available for iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. You need a current account, so not just a credit card or a debit card, a current account, because they'll do a BACS transaction on your behalf. And once you've got the app on it and your friend's got an app, I can transfer anything from £1 to £750 to you.
Oh, very nice. And that's just using near-field communications, using the NFC technology, is it?
Now, NFC is one of the things. You notice I said iPhone was one of the apps available, and Apple haven't got the NFC, so they do support other methods of paying to a friend who's basically also running Ping It.
Oh, very useful. And I know that, interestingly, this is actually something that's really popular in Africa and the like, isn't it? Where the banking system is maybe not quite so widespread. You know, here obviously we tend to have banks on every high street corner, and everyone has a current account. Actually, in Africa, there's a huge deal of mobile phone based banking. Effectively, you know, people pay for their utility bills using their mobile phones. People don't necessarily have iPhones, but even just using the normal mobile phone providers, they use it. So in a sense, we're a little bit late to the game on this.
Yeah, I mean, the micropayment environment has been around for a long while, like you said, on mobile phones. I mean, mobile phones became very popular in Africa because of the lack of landline communications in a lot of outskirts and outlying areas. I mean, the countries are so big that to run copper wires out to everyone is nearly impossible. So mobile phones really took off. And micropayments, like you said, for paying for small things, you know, if you're paying for your utility bills on a weekly basis, to do that on a pay-as-you-go mobile phone is very easy. You can go and buy a top-up card, do it via your phone, and you're done. Now, I mean, PayPal have also come to this party. So PayPal have got a technology called PayPal Here, coming soon, they keep saying, and this will be a chip and pin reader to attach to your iPhone or your Android device, so that if you're a small business or a sole trader, you can actually take card payments in person from someone.
Now that's interesting, because I know that Swipe have been very, very big in the States, have just announced that they're coming to the UK as well. So some real competition going in that space by the sounds of things.
Certainly lots of vendors coming out with that sort of solution. I know Sage have got something coming out as well, and they are quite big in small business accountancy packages. So have Intuit, another small business accountancy package company. So yes, it's going to certainly benefit the small trader, the sole trader, people at car boot sales who want to sell stuff and be able to take card payments will be able to. And most of these companies offering free setup and basically just paying a small, 2-3% transaction cost on the card payment, but you can take card payments instead of cash at a car boot sale.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for that, Lawrence. And that's all we've got time for this week, but we'll be back in a fortnight's time with another episode of the Gadget Guide. Thanks, Julian.